Chapter 6. She's my fucking lady friend. Romantic relationships for bipolar people. So you found that special lady friend, did you? Or guy, or envy? Whatever their preferred nomenclature is, it doesn't really matter. Here's what I want you to take away from this chapter. It's difficult but worth it to be in a romantic relationship with someone who is bipolar. Additionally, for my bipolar folks who are reading this, I want to give you some tips and tricks on how to be a little less burdensome to your partner, or partners, this is 2024 after all, during your manic highs and depressive lows. Now here's a brief history of my love life bona fides for you. As mentioned in a previous chapter, I grew up a bit of a prude. That didn't mean I didn't like the ladies, however. I went just about as far as my brainwashed and conservative evangelically Christian conscience would allow me to go without believing I would be cast forever into the fiery pit of hell the next day. Practically speaking, this meant a lot of making out and some mostly over the clothes stuff. No coitus. Looking back, perhaps it was a good thing, because as I write this at age 37, many of my high school friends are now celebrating the graduations of their firstborns. And not that there's anything wrong with that, it's just not for me. I honestly can't imagine having spent my 20s and early 30s with a kid. I would always tell people that I'm too selfish to be a parent, and as a teacher, didn't like the idea of taking work home with me. And that's what I recognize raising kids to be, work. These days, they don't even provide you with any economic value whatsoever. They're a huge net loss, and there's no guarantee of them caring for you in your old age. My parents are still under the delusion that their bipolar maniac of a son will be the one to rely upon when they're entering their sunset years. But then we all have to tell ourselves little lies, I guess. The truth is that now that I'm in my second marriage-bound relationship, I do want kids. A little Lebowski on the way, if you will. I'll say that it is understandable that my ex-wife didn't want them, though, because in her defense, I'm already a lot. I was a lot worse when I didn't believe I had it, and before I got on a strict drug regimen, too. Regardless, though, she didn't sign up to marry a bipolar person. It wasn't until after ending a 17-year marriage that I found the woman who actually wanted to knowingly marry a bipolar person and even have kids with them, no less. If my ex-wife was a good caretaker, this woman is a saint. And I say she's a saint because I didn't have my life figured out when I met her. Quite the opposite, in fact. There's an old saying that you don't date on potential, but if she was sizing me up, I would have had very little to offer. I was a former high-performing individual who, in my mind, was past his prime and planning to move to Bosnia and Herzegovina to live out his days in drunken excess and debauchery. On the cheap, of course, I'm lazy and of Scottish descent after all. Once we were together, however, I felt like much more was possible again. I started dreaming again about a future with her that didn't amount to pure escapism. I got my drinking under control, save for a night here and there where I forgot how much my tolerance levels had lowered. In short, I started trying again. So some people ask why I got divorced, and to be fair, I technically didn't. I got a dissolution. I digress, but I guess I would say that if the relationship you're in doesn't serve your purposes anymore, and neither of you is happy, and you've given it your best shot, it's probably not worth it to continue. You get one life here, and it's too short to spend it with someone who doesn't make you happy, and vice versa. And thankfully I've found that person. It's an age gap relationship of 11 years, for those who are wondering. As an aside, one thing I've noticed about age gap relationships is that every couple who is in one thinks that their age gap is acceptable, if not perhaps stretching the limits a bit. None of them think they're too far apart, though. If yours is higher, however, they always think you are. But whatever, that's just like their opinion, man. And that brings me to my first piece of advice, which is to not get married when you're young. Maybe you want the kids, but, and unless there's a good reason for it, you'll have time for them, don't worry. You don't even have to have your own. There's a surplus right now, in fact, globally. I was 19 when I got married the first time, and I'll be 38 the second. She'll be 27, or 8 years older than I was the first time I got married. I think both of us know who we are now much more than I did at 19. And I think that's the key. If you can grow together and change enough, then you'll be okay. If you're not compatible to begin with, or fail to adapt to the changes in the other person, you'll fail. But it's okay to fail. However, given that I made it 17 years with the wrong person, I feel like the chances are pretty, pretty good that I made the right decision this time around. And we've been through some shit together, don't get me wrong. I've been manic during her depressions and made some super impulsive decisions with long-lasting consequences, and I've hurt her terribly in the past. And I'm not saying that she hasn't done anything to me either, but it takes a special person to be in a relationship with a bipolar person. You have to be able to draw some clear boundaries of what you'll tolerate before you have to commit them, or worse, leave them altogether. My ex-wife tried to do that with me and asked me to get almost entirely sober, including drugs, alcohol, and tobacco, but especially weed. She never understood or believed, I'm not sure which, that it truly helps me regulate my bipolar disorder. And in part because of that irreconcilable difference and many others, we parted ways amicably. My fiance actually gets how weed helps me manage my disorder, though. Be still, my beating heart. So one of the funny ironies about me is that I am a professional mediator, but I get in fights all the time. Not necessarily physical ones, but I can be a bit abrasive at times, which can, and often does, lead to conflict. Sometimes I actually enjoy arguing with friends of mine who I know can handle a good debate. I honestly think they're fun. But I'm the lawyer-type personality on Myers-Briggs, so I'm ruthless in the courtroom of relationship battles, which, I've learned, is not always appreciated by my partner. Now, what I'm going to tell you about fights next will come from the mediator hat-wearing side of me, the transformative mediator, to be precise. In the transformative approach to conflict, the whole theory basically boils down to the key propositions that conflict is a crisis in human interaction, and that it is made worse by the fact that we operate out of weakness and self-absorption while we are in it. In other words, fights happen because we are unable to communicate effectively, and when they do, we get big, mad, and petty, which makes things worse. This, in turn, leads to a downward spiral that we can easily get sucked into, never to return. So, not great. The opposite of weakness and self-absorption, then, is strength and connection. This is the side of you that thinks maybe we can talk through it and wants to restore the relationship. It's also the side of you willing to see their side and willing to try and change your behavior when you need to. Most importantly, however, it's the side of you that's willing to listen. That's the side you need to tap into when things are at their worst. But I can tell you, even as a mediator, being in conflict sucks, and you really can't mediate your own disputes. You have to work through the situation together or get someone else to help you. What you can do, however, is focus on listening. You can reflect and summarize what they're saying to make sure you understand their point of view. You can stay open instead of closed off. You can choose to engage instead of shutting down. You can write your thoughts down in a journal instead of shouting them at one another or silently bottling them all up inside, and then give the journals to each other to read when you're both feeling less heated. You can learn how to argue better. You can realize that it's both of you against the issue instead of both of you versus each other. All of those things are within your power if you choose to do them. Or you can blame them and refuse to take responsibility. You can also become toxic and bring up their past transgressions as a way to win an argument. You can even use their deepest insecurities against them. Or you can simply walk away. All of these are also within your power. I've tried all of these as well, and I can say definitively that they do not work. Not even a little bit. Unless you're trying to end the relationship, then they work great. But that's not what I wanted, and thankfully that's not what the SLF wanted either. So we fight for our relationship every day, and we are stronger because of it. But if you were to ask the SLF or the ex, I'm sure they could both tell you about the unique challenges that come with being in an intimate relationship with a bipolar person like myself, and they are plentiful. One is that sometimes our brains take over and we can no longer do those things I mentioned above, and we start down a self-destructive path that potentially only a hospitalization can pull us out of. Meanwhile, we'll only go kicking and screaming and refuse to believe our friends and loved ones when they tell us we're quite literally out of our minds. But even in less dramatic scenarios, we can be difficult. Sometimes, for example, our mania takes over and causes us to want to go on a spending spree that you have to curtail diplomatically. Or maybe we get some grand new business idea, and you have to be the bad guy for asking for things like a business plan before any funds are dedicated to it. Or maybe our depression means we can't be there emotionally for you for a while. All these scenarios can be extremely difficult and lead to hurtful fights if you're not careful, so it's important to come up with a preliminary agreement on when you'll decide to get treatment and what will happen when you're manic or depressed and want to start or end something big in your life. The mania contract and suicide safety plan I've included in the appendix are both good places to start that discussion. The benefit of this, of course, is that if there's already a process in place that you both believe is fair when challenges like these come along, there doesn't have to be an argument. At least, that's the theory. I promise this can save you a lot of future heartache. Talk about as many scenarios as you can before they happen and agree on something when you're both of sound mind. You won't regret it, I promise. And you might even save your future relationship by taking these proactive steps.